Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're really digging into an ancient story that still hits home with some incredibly powerful lessons about faith, resilience, and, well, what true integrity looks like.
Yeah, we're talking about the Book of Job, specifically chapter one.
Exactly. We're going to unpack that first chapter, a narrative that really challenges our understanding of, prosperity and suffering.
It certainly does.
And our mission for you today is to pull out that timeless wisdom from Job's, well, raw experience and see how it applies directly to our own lives.
And how it can encourage us, right, in
Yeah.
obedience and maybe strengthen our faith even now.
That's the goal. So let's start by meeting the man himself, Job. The text tells us he lived in the land of Uz.
Right. And the description is pretty remarkable.
It really is. He's called perfect and upright, someone who feared God and eschewed evil. Now, eschewed evil, that's not everyday language.
No, it means he actively turned away from wickedness. It's deliberate.
So not just a generally good guy. This was someone whose character was, like, impeccable. Confirmed from the top, you could say.
And it wasn't just character. He was also incredibly blessed materially.
Oh, massively. The kind of wealth that's hard to even imagine. 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels.
500 yoke of oxen, 500 she asses. I mean, the list goes on.
It made him the greatest of all the men of the East. Simple as that.
And beyond the wealth, there's the family. A big one. Seven sons, three daughters. It seems like they were close-knit, too.
So the picture is one of just complete abundance, perfect life almost.
Outwardly, yes. But what's really fascinating is his spiritual devotion. It wasn't just personal.
Right, you mentioned it extended to his family. How so?
Well, the text says after his children had their feasts, these big get-togethers they seemed to have,
Yeah.
Job would consistently send for them, sanctify them, ritually purify them. He'd get up early, offer burnt offerings for each one.
For each child. Wow, that's
It
dedication.
really is. And he did it regularly. It wasn't just, a one-time thing. It was a habit.
Driven by what, though? The text says something about his concern.
Exactly. He worried. It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. So it shows this proactive, consistent spiritual discipline.
Even when things were good.
Especially then, it seems. Building that spiritual foundation, acting like a spiritual guardian for his family, it suggests a deep integrity.
That's a really strong point, building spiritual habits in times of peace. But, couldn't someone see that as almost excessive, like driven by fear, maybe, not just faith?
That's a fair question. And I think this story really pushes back on that interpretation later. It doesn't seem like fear of punishment.
More like reverence.
Yeah, I think so. Reverence and responsibility. It wasn't about earning points with God, but recognizing God's holiness and trying to align his family with it.
Like humility. Even being perfect and upright, he knew things could go wrong spiritually.
Precisely. It points to a genuine relationship, not just a transaction.
Okay, so now things take a turn, a big one.
A huge one. The scene shifts.
Right. From Job's nice life on earth, suddenly we're in the heavens. There's this gathering, the sons of God presenting themselves before the Lord.
These heavenly beings, yeah. And then Satan shows up among them.
Which is fascinating in itself. And God almost, well, he brings Job up first, doesn't he?
He does. He points Job out to Satan. Almost like he's proud of him.
Yeah, like, have you considered my servant Job? Highlighting how there's none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man.
One that feareth God and escheweth evil. It's a direct challenge from God, in a
Yeah.
way.
What do you think that says about God's confidence in Job?
It shows incredible confidence, a divine affirmation of Job's character. But Satan's role here is key, too. He's not some rival power.
He's presented more like an accuser, operating with permission.
Exactly. And he immediately questions Job's motive. That's the crucial thing.
He asks, "Doth Job fear God for naught?" Basically, is he only faithful because life is good?
Right. Satan claims God has put a hedge about him, protecting him, blessing everything. That's why Job's faithful, according to Satan.
So the challenge is laid down.
Yes. Satan proposes, essentially, take away the blessings, touch all that he has, and he'll curse you to your face.
And this isn't framed as punishment for Job, is it?
No, not at all. It's presented as a test, a proving ground for the authenticity of Job's faith. Is it unconditional?
Which directly hits that idea that our obedience is just, a trade for good stuff.
Absolutely.
So God's response to this challenge.
Well, he permits the test. He grants Satan power over everything Job has.
Everything.
All his possessions, his livestock, his servants, even his children, implicitly. But there's one critical limit.
Right. Satan cannot harm Job himself, not touch his body.
Correct. The boundary is clear. Job's physical person is off limits in this first round.
And what follows is just brutal, the speed of it.
It's breathtakingly fast and intense, all in a single day. Messenger after messenger arrives.
Can you just walk us through that sequence? It's devastating.
First, news comes that the Sabians raided, took the oxen and donkeys, killed the servants with them.
Okay, bad enough. But then...
Then another messenger. The fire of God, maybe lightning, some divine act fell and burned up the sheep and those servants.
So more loss, more death.
And it keeps coming. Next, the Chaldeans attack, organized in three groups, take the camels, kill more servants.
It's just relentless, wiping out his wealth source by source.
And then the final blow, the worst imaginable.
His children.
Yes.
Yeah.
A messenger arrives, says a great wind struck the house where all 10 of Job's children were eating together. The house collapsed.
And they're all gone.
All dead. In an instant.
Just... try to put yourself in that position, messenger after messenger, loss upon loss, your entire world, your family, everything, gone in hours.
The cumulative weight is unimaginable. How do you even process that?
Most people would completely break. Anger, despair, bitterness. That seems like the natural human reaction.
Absolutely. But Job's response, it's perhaps the most astonishing part of the whole chapter.
What does he do?
He gets up, he tears his robe, shaves his head, traditional, profound signs of deep mourning and grief.
So he feels it. He's not numb.
Oh, definitely not numb. He's grieving deeply. But then what he does...
he falls to the ground.
And worships.
Worships. In that moment. That's incredible.
It defies expectation.
Huh.
His immediate gut reaction amidst shattering loss is worship.
What does that reveal about the core of who he was?
Well, listen to his words. They explain everything. He says, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither."
Acknowledging his fundamental state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, the Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Wow. Acceptance and praise, even then.
Even then. And the text makes a point of saying, in all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly.
He didn't blame God. He didn't accuse him wrongly.
No. It shows this incredible spiritual integrity, this deep understanding that everything was ultimately a gift. He maintained reverence. He chose praise over accusation.
That's a faith that just transcends circumstances.
It's pure worship, independent of what he had or didn't have.
Okay, let's pivot then. How does this ancient story speak to us now? Facing our own, maybe less dramatic, but still real challenges.
Well, the first big takeaway, I think, is that true faith isn't built on comfort or success. It just isn't.
Job's devotion wasn't transactional. He worshiped God with everything, and he worshiped with nothing.
Right. And that really pushes against some modern ideas, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A sort of health and wealth gospel.
Definitely. The idea that if you have enough faith, you'll automatically get rich or be perfectly healthy, Job blows that up.
Completely. It forces us to ask, you know, is our faith about truly revering God?
Right.
Or is it conditional on getting what we want?
And what about that idea of spiritual integrity? You mentioned God himself praised Job.
Yeah, his righteousness was genuine, not just for show. And the test wasn't punishment. It was proof.
So if wealth or comfort aren't the main signs of spiritual health,
then our faith has to be strong enough to stand when those things fade. Maybe especially when they fade.
It encourages obedience regardless of circumstance. Being faithful even when it's incredibly hard.
Because that's when our integrity is really shown. Not just in the good times, but in the crucible.
And the worship aspect. Worship as a choice, even in grief.
That's huge. Job mourned, tearing the robe, shaving the head. That's real grief. But his first move, after acknowledging the loss, was worship.
It showed humility, trust, not denial of the pain, but choosing faith over bitterness.
It's such a powerful model for how we can respond to loss. It doesn't mean you don't feel the pain, but you bring that pain into worship, into trust.
Strengthens faith even when your heart is breaking.
Exactly. And digging a bit deeper, Job's earlier habits matter too.
His regular prayers for his children.
Yes. That consistent seeking of God, that spiritual discipline before the crisis hit that built the foundation, it prepared him in a way.
Like spiritual preparation is crucial for resilience. You don't start training for a marathon the day of the race.
Good analogy. His integrity wasn't created by the suffering. It was revealed by it. But the groundwork was laid in times of peace.
So the lesson for us is about building those habits now.
I think so. Because true faith, true obedience, is shown most clearly in how we respond when life gets incredibly difficult.
And his famous line, "The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away."
It reminds us everything is temporary. We come with nothing. We leave with nothing. It's all a gift, ultimately.
Which should lead to gratitude, right? And deeper trust in the giver, not just the gifts.
That's the heart of it. Trusting God, regardless of what's in our hands.
What a journey just in that first chapter. Seeing Job face tests that seem unbearable, yet holding on to his integrity, offering worship. It's profound.
It really is.
And his response is such a powerful encouragement for our own obedience, our own faith. It reminds us that real trust in God isn't about gains or losses.
It's about recognizing him as the constant, the giver, through it all.
Yeah, the deeper truth seems to be that our spiritual integrity, who we really are deep down, it's shown most clearly not by what we have,
but by our posture, our heart's response, when everything else is stripped away.
So as you, our listener, reflect on Job's story today, maybe consider this question. In what area of your life might building just one small, consistent spiritual habit now, in a time of relative peace, better prepare you for the unexpected challenges and losses that, well, life inevitably brings?